Hey everyone, this is the Save the Earth podcast, and I want to thank everyone who's listening in. A lot of work was put into this by UConn Perg Save the Earth campaign, but it was a lot of fun too. This is episode 1, Intersectionality and Environmentalism. Hope you enjoy. Hello, and welcome to the Save the Earth Climate Podcast. My name is Ben, and I am joined here today by Monet, B, and Mason. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. If you guys want to introduce yourselves a little bit, where like your orgs, and then we can get started on the interview discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Brittany. Some people call me B. I'm a double major in political science and human rights with a minor in public policy. I'm also a junior here at UConn on the pre-law track. And I'm also the president of UConn Collaborative Organizing, also known as UCO. And I'm here today to talk about UConn's contract with Coca-Cola and environmental justice and collaborative organizing.
My name is Mason Holland. I'm the Public Education and Outreach Chair of UConn Collaborative Organizing. Additionally, I'm the Community Service Chair of Brothers Reaching Our Society and the President of NAACP. And I'm a sophomore at UConn in the Honors Department studying political science and minoring in women's gender and sexuality studies. And as B said, you know, we're here today to talk about environmental activism, specifically in relation to UConn's contract with Coca-Cola. And with collaborating with organizations around the school.
Thank you guys so much. As been said, I'm Monet. I am also working on the Save the Earth campaign. So we just first want to ask you guys what your experiences have been with activism at UConn. So anything you want to share, how you got into it, would be cool to hear about. B, if you want to go first.
Yeah, definitely. So I would say my activism, or at least I'm not really sure if it's activism, but involvement in UConn and then transforming it into activism started probably the first week of my freshman year at UConn Hartford when I joined their student government. And basically, I just kind of climbed the ranks and did a lot of work. I've noticed that a lot of my most successful work has obviously been collaborating with other people. So I find that to be very useful and impactful. But I would say the really big thing that got me into campus activism was when I wrote the mental care act proposal last year. And I noticed that kind of spread about. And I think one of the biggest successes of my activism is just finding a common ground with people and making it personal.
That's perfect. That's exactly why we're here. Mason, what about you?
So I came into UConn last year as a freshman, coming from Jersey, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do on campus. I didn't really have an idea of how I could get involved in things. And then that shift kind of happened for me, when the Charter Oak incident happened last year. And I realized, you know, it was just, there was a lot of things to be behind on campus. Like there was a lot of, movements and initiatives to be a part of. And I was usually always the person to sit in the back and write about things and give commentary, but never actually do things. And then it kind of furthered when I became a part of UCO and I started going to the meetings every Sunday. And I think the moment I knew that, you know, I was going to be involved in activism here at UConn was the Mental Health Action Day. And at that day, I came to advocate specifically for Black and Brown students at UConn in relation to the mental health care that we get. And I knew there that, you know, there was a lot of problems at UConn that I wasn't aware of previously. There's a lot of people that don't really want to address them. And I felt, you know, the urge to be able to be a part of so many different things and to be able to, really lend my leadership, my creativity, and my time to be able to address them. Now I'm in more leadership positions than I was last year. I'm at more tables than I was last year. I have more of a say than I did last year. It all came about throughout collaboration throughout being, you know, introduced to other orgs throughout, like being in these different events and in these different spaces. So I'm grateful for that. And I think that, you know, the most difficult part of being an activist here on campus is to really to try to get people to understand what you're talking about isn't crazy. You know, like I think people think that radical means crazier or far reaching, but it really doesn't. It's just things that have never been introduced to the mainstream conversation yet. And that comes in relation to, you know, administration, faculty and staff. It comes in relation to students that don't understand what you're talking about. And I think it's, you know, it's difficult to be striving and fighting for something that maybe a lot of people don't understand or don't really care about. But, you know, I'm glad to be in spaces again that, you know, we're able to facilitate growth and facilitate collaboration. That's exactly why we're here today. So,
exactly. Well said. So we know that a couple of weeks ago, the UConn NAACP, UCO, and a group called Power Up UConn hosted the vigil for Breonna Taylor. We want to kind of know what was that like for you guys and why it's important for environmentalists to support these events, like even Defund Police and the Black Lives Matter movement in general.
So I think for me, when I came in, and Brittany could definitely tell you this, like when I came in, my whole life I've been involved in racial activism. I never really took an in-depth look at environmental activism until the COVID-19 pandemic. And I realized the disproportionate effect that it was having on Black and Brown communities. And then I began connecting the dots between, you know, food insecurity and then more so, you know, where people live and the quality of the environment there. And then I realized, you know, like places where my family's from. My dad's from Chester, Pennsylvania. My mother's from Jersey City. And, you know, all these different locations, like these urban locations are near industry and they don't really have, you know, good air quality. The environment is not really good. And a lot of times, you know, there's lead in water, things of that nature. And I think that was when I first made that connection that, you know, racial equity and racial struggle is connected to environmental struggle, because through the environment is how we're oppressed. And through the environment is how our bodies and our health and our psychological space is affected. And at the vigil, it was a beautiful thing, and I'm glad we were able to, you know, bring everybody together for a moment of healing and a moment of serenity. And you know, for environmentalists that want to be involved in this, I mean, the environmental struggle comprises the Black Indigenous ethnic struggle. You know, we're part and parcel with everything. We're connected. That's what intersectionality is. Understanding that different identities are all coagulate into one, in one like spider web of connection, and to truly understand the environmental impact that affects everybody in the world, you have to understand the racial struggle. You have to be able to connect those dots with redlining and housing discrimination, to Flint not having good water quality. To greenhouse gases affecting, the wind patterns and the weather patterns that eventually, you know, hurt the places down south. A lot of the times that are more poor, like, you know, we talk about Louisiana and Florida and all these different places. They're not mutually exclusive from each other. And to view one in totality, you have to look at the other side, whether you're talking about racial equity or environmentalism.
Exactly. B, you want to touch upon this too with the collaboration and the vigil?
Yeah, absolutely. I just think that for me, one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to organize it along with the many members of UCO and Power Up and NAACP and a lot of folks is that I think it's important with activism that when you tackle such big things that you also take the space to grieve and acknowledge what's really going on so you could continue fighting, because I feel like that's very important, because it's always like pushing yourself to keep doing more, but sometimes you really have to like reflect and really think. And I think that a lot of people already knew of the situation and the unfortunate death of Breonna Taylor, but I think it wasn't until like we all gathered that it was just something different, like it was unexplainable, like the feeling of just seeing everyone else there was something that it just couldn't be done over Zoom. It was that physical presence that people had been missing for months because of this COVID crisis and folks' mental health state, and things like that. And I think within regards to racial injustice, it's very important to tie that into environmental issues, because ultimately, as Mason said, BIPOC folks are the most people, like, we are the people who are impacted the most. And I think that with environmentalism and a lot of things within STEM, a lot of BIPOC people are missing from that conversation. And that's very harmful, because it's a lot of folks and scientists making decisions for land that they don't know anything about, or making decisions for folks that it's negatively going to harm other people. And even in, like, cities and areas, so, like, some people even say that policing is related to environmental justice, and how that can also be something that needs to be addressed. And I just think that, as Mason said, it's very important to acknowledge these intersecting problems, issues, and identities, and how environmentalists need to show up for all sorts of issues in order to really do the work that they do.
And to really just speak on that again really quick, we know who Greta Thunberg is, right? Like, we know who non-BIPOC folks are that are in environmentalism, but we don't talk about the faces of color. Like, we don't talk about Wangari Maathai. We don't talk about Wawa Gathera or Kat Morris here at UConn. Like, these are the people that, you know, are not only, you know, reaching the people that can't be reached by the mainstream environmental movement, but again, to B's point, these are the people that are being impacted the most, you know? And especially in America, when we address what corporations do and what capitalism has created, you know, they're part and parcel with why the environment affects us. And again, to understand the environmental struggle in totality, you have to look at the racial aspect of it.
Exactly. So I know me and Ben had talked about how, you know, like, Greta Thunberg and, like, these big faces you see, that's not the only part of the movement. Ben, do you want to touch on something with this?
Yeah, we just, well, we want to make sure that in the environmental movement, we kind of have that one leader, Greta Thunberg, but that diminishes the voices of the very inspiring leaders like Wawa and Kat that we see at UConn. And we want to make sure that we raise up as many of those voices as we can, especially those who are have those personal stories, because they're being personally affected by all of these intersecting issues. But I love what you guys have said so far.
Yeah. And speaking of people who, like, how do you guys think that, like, when it comes to, like, it's like there's a lot of large groups of dedicated people, especially at UConn, but there's also a lot of small groups of dedicated people. So what do you think is the main difference between expanding the small groups and bringing them together to collaborate, so that we can have more voices heard from people who are maybe being, like, more directly affected by these problems?
I think that's extremely important, the more we expand our networks and just emphasizing collaborative organizing, because with that, I mean, we don't want to think in a binary lens. The more voices and the more perspectives we have, the more issues we're going to cover, because the thing with Greta is that while she knows a lot about environmental issues and things like that within those regards, the thing is, she can't speak on my issues of being Puerto Rican and how that is different. She can't speak about the environmental crisis and environmental colonialism in Puerto Rico, etc. So that's why we need to collaborate, because people can't speak for everyone's experience. That's why we need so many people. And it's like, if you only address one part of the environmental issue, you're not really addressing anything at all, because ultimately this is the issue that affects everyone. So if only one positive change, because it's just going to collapse eventually.
100%. And just to speak to that too, you know, just because an organization is large and has a lot of people and it talks about a lot of stuff, you know, we're not the only source of information on these things. And that's why I think I'm most proud to be a member of UCO, because it's not about the notoriety of the organization. We really don't care how long you've been at UConn. We've been at UConn for 2 years. And we just want everybody's identity and everybody's, you know, perspective to be weighted equally, you know, because it's not, if we're not all free, then none of us are free. If we're not all, if all of our problems are addressed, then none of our problems are addressed. And we really feel that way. And you know, if the more we collaborate, the more, like Brittany said, we expand our networks and we create these relationships, the more we're going to be able to talk about these things in a wide reaching way to be able to focus on everything, you know, because if we only talk about it from one perspective, it doesn't do any justice to somebody who's struggling in silence and can't get their perspective apart, their perspective across. And, you know, that's why we do what we do. So it's necessary to collaborate. And it's necessary to make sure everybody else has their perspective not only heard but weighted equally as everybody else's.
Exactly. Like you said, you've been here for 2 years and I've been here for about 2 months, and I feel like I've already been exposed to a lot of different experiences, because I grew up in a very, like, my town demographic was all the same, and I feel like it's important for, like, us to go and get educated and really reach out to, like, all the different experiences people have had. Ben, do you want to continue with the next question?
I think this is a good moment to pivot to the Coke contract, because that's kind of a complicated issue that I don't think a lot of people know about. But I think collaborative organizing is it's the answer to that one specific policy, because collaborative organizing is about bringing in all these intersecting issues. But sometimes you do have to look at, you know, one specific policy. So I'm actually not sure. How much do you guys know about UConn's contract with Coca-Cola?
I know the basics of it, and I know, like, the violations that are the history of violations that Coke has had.
Same.
Ben, you want to do the history of it so who's listening can know what we're talking about?
So in the past, a lot of colleges, including UConn, have had contracts with either Coca-Cola or Pepsi or Nestle, you know, these huge corporations that exploit developing countries, have extremely unsustainable practices. And, you know, when they have a contract with a university, especially a university like UConn that, like, promotes sustainability, it limits the students' freedoms to make a more eco-conscious consumer choice. So, but the best way to understand that is to look at just environmental colonialism and how these corporations have exploited these developing countries. And if you guys want to speak more on that, I invite you to.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a lot of folks know that Coke is an international company, and they have a long history of just a long list of human rights violations, and specifically workers' violations. The other day I was doing research on this issue, actually, and I came across an article that had mentioned that the company had ignored the murder of labor organizers and workers at bottling plants in Colombia, and that's from Coke. And there's just such a long list of human rights violations, and yet they all affect predominantly people of color countries and predominantly ethnic countries. And you look at that, and yet Coca-Cola is located in Atlanta, but most of their work is denying other people's rights or taking land just to produce these products. And onto that, Coca-Cola has even tried to interrupt the flow of worker unions and tried to cut off the democracy that people have in other countries. And yet these worker violations are still happening and continuing. And it's not fair, because it's like these people are working and working for only Coca-Cola to make money, and they're just exploiting their work. That's what capitalism is. It's just it's a continuing cycle of exploiting their work. And yet these are predominantly people of color doing that work. And when we look at environmental colonialism, it's a lot of these people don't have a choice where these factories are being built. And that's a problem, because they're the people who are going to end up dealing with the aftermath of, oh, this is a factory, this is a polluting source in my neighborhood. They don't have the choice to determine where this is going to be built next. Actually, the town next to me, like literally 5 minutes away from my house, they're actually building a Coca-Cola factory right there. I don't have a choice if that could be built down the road. If I did, I would say no. But this area that I live next to used to just be a whole big, and like just a bunch of grass and cornfields. I don't have a choice now that there's workers every single day. There's already smoke everywhere. I don't have that privilege or that choice. And yet that's going to be impacting me and people like my family. So if we look at that, even think about the indigenous people in the States, like the United States, for example, a lot of their land has been taken away for the production of other products such as Coca-Cola. So in that sense, they don't have a choice to choose where these factories are being built. And that's the same on an international scale, on top of their violation of workers' rights and just continuing to try to interrupt workers from collaborating with unions and coming together. And that's kind of the big issue with Coca-Cola, or at least how I see it.
Being a political science major, I always tend to start things from the political socioeconomic lens. So that's where I'll start. So with Coca-Cola, as soon as I became part of UCO, I already knew that this was an issue, but I didn't really know what Coca-Cola did until I looked into them. And I think that's part of the design. You know, capitalism is designed to disassociate you so much from the creation of something to, you know, from the process to the creation of something. So we're not tapped into what they do in relation to workers' violations, because those happen in different countries. We're not tapped into, you know, how, you know, they exploit the economic conditions of these countries to be able to get, you know, cheaper labor. And I think that, you know, it's one of the facets of capitalism that allows it to function so well, but it also doesn't, you know, it doesn't benefit society as it is. Even in terms of how, you know, the way that they Coke packages things, like I have a Sprite bottle right here and I was just looking at it. You know, it's part of the Coca-Cola company, and they're one of the main polluters of the environment. They're a reason why, you know, turtles are choking on bottles. And, you know, it's disheartening because we live in a world where so much companies place, you know, the value of a dollar or the value of currency over a human life. And we're not really aware of the effect unless we actually go out and seek that information. That's not information we're designed to know about. It's not information that, you know, we're ever supposed to understand or have in our possession. And, you know, to see the environmental impact that Coke has had is like I said, it's really disheartening. And I think that, you know, more people have to understand the implications of supporting that. It's not as simple as, you know, we don't tend to think about things like being connected. Like I said before, with racial equality and environmentalism, we don't tend to connect buying a drink to drink with lunch with, you know, the oppression of labor workers and labor unions across the world. But that's the way it is. And I think that, you know, it's so much deeper than just what we view it as consumers. And the environmental impact it's had, again, is really, really disheartening. And, you know, the more that I think, you know, I'm glad that you guys are even having this conversation, because, you know, I don't think a lot of UConn students know this. They just know what they see, and they just know what they see on bottles and on billboards and on the scoreboard. But they don't know that the true nature of these companies. And I mean, it has to be addressed. And until it does, you know, we're never going to have true environmental labor justice within that realm.
And just to add on briefly, I was just thinking about it. My aunt, who lives about 10-15 minutes away from me, she is Puerto Rican. My whole family is Puerto Rican, and she lives in a city that's predominantly Puerto Rican and Black. But her neighbor is a Coca-Cola factory. Like, in her neighborhood, when I go visit her, the air in that neighborhood isn't clear. If anything, it's foggy. And I think about it and I look around, and it's sad, because it's like every time I walk over there, there's either bottles on the ground. There's no, people say recycle, but I don't see recycling bins in her neighborhood. Like, that's also another thing, resources. Like, we're telling people to do these things, but we're not providing those things. And just the thought of, like, it's not even just Coca-Cola, because that's a big part of it as well. But then we also have like Pratt and Whitney right there. And there's just so many other things. And it's like, when Coca-Cola establishes themselves and puts themselves in these neighborhoods, it's like you're saying that these products are for the betterment of like the greater people. It's such an American thing. It's idolizing that. But in all reality, it's just a product of American imperialism and expansion. Because my aunt didn't sign up to have Coca-Cola to be her neighbor right next to her. And my family didn't also sign up to have most of their children having asthma and cancer. That's a problem to me. Like, that's unconsensual. That's a violation of land. That's a violation of your rights. And that's the problem when Coca-Cola's company, like Coca-Cola, even internationally, if we look at Colombia and Turkey and other places, right, they start to see these people as more of a commodity than they are of actual people. It's continuing to choose profit over people. That's the issue, that certain people are subhuman in a sense where it doesn't matter if we put a factory or a plant there, because at the end of the day, it's going to just benefit us. And that's a real big issue, especially with Coca-Cola and for UConn to keep doing these land acknowledgements, but yet still participating in this type of colonial behavior.
I could not have said it better. And I think to tie in some of the things that you guys have just been saying, that factory in your town, no one in your community signed up for it, but there are inevitably people who will need those jobs. And working for that factory will benefit the corporation more than it will benefit the workers. The workers will still be exploited, and that will allow the company to further exploit the rest of the world and continue that environmental degradation. So, but I think we also touched on the fact that not a lot of UConn students know about this, which is why we're having this conversation. But how would you say UConn students can get involved to make sure that we don't have a contract with this corporation or any other corporation that has similar practices?
I think it starts off with doing your research, because honestly, I think most of the students at UConn don't really know that this is an issue, or I think there's a lot of things, unfortunately, that there are a lot of problems here at the university, and I think that a lot of folks are aware of these issues, but it's not really to the full extent. And it's sad that the issues that are mainly affecting us and other people, that we have to do the research to even identify the issue, while the university just gets to sit back and sign this contract. So I think it's also just getting involved with orgs like UCO and Fridays for Future or PERG or whatever it is, like expanding your network, kind of like what we talked about before, literally just collaborative organizing and meeting other folks and talking to professors, especially those in environmental studies or sciences. And I think one of the ways that students can get involved is by talking to other people, making those networks, talking to student leaders, talking to activists. Like if I never met Kat Morris, who's the founder of UCO, I think that my views and my outlook on UConn would be a lot more narrow. I wouldn't know as much as I did now. I wouldn't know about the Coca-Cola thing if I never met Kat. I wouldn't. There's a lot of things that just interacting with people really makes a big difference about what you know, especially here at the UConn community, given that we're just this big community in size, but in all reality, we're very small of networks. And I think just establishing those grounds is a great idea, and especially working within neighborhoods in Connecticut specifically and seeing the local impact.
So to piggyback off that, first of all, is education. Like, to everybody's point, a large population at UConn doesn't know that this exists, doesn't even know. I don't think a lot of people know that their favorite brands are complicit in the degradation and oppression of people around the world. So I think that's the first part. That's where we come in. That's what collaborative organizing is to get as many groups as possible. They don't even have to be related to quote unquote social justice, but to get them to be able to have these conversations, to open their minds, to be able to be open that, you know, yes, something that I like is complicit in hurting somebody else, and then understanding what to do about that. And to B's point, like, we have to be very intentional and very specific in how we address these things. We can't just let these be reduced to thoughts or to conversations, basically waxing poetic. Like, they have to be translated to action. We have to understand that policy has to be enacted to help people, to get corporations out of communities, to get corporations unaligned with universities that then will turn around and claim that, you know, they respect and acknowledge and understand that they are existing upon native land. Like, we have to be honest in how we address these things. It can't just be a band-aid that we use to cover it up. And the people that listen to this, that, you know, are in a position to do something at UConn, you know, don't tell anybody that you care about these things if you don't put in actionable items. Your words don't mean anything. They don't. Because we've been talking about this for months now. There's been groups that have been talking about this for years. And UConn's known about this. I promise UConn knows about this. And still nothing's happened. And for UConn to actually live up to what they talk about, for the administration to be able to, you know, honestly say that they care about the environment, they have to put their money where their mouth is. We did it in Mansfield with, you know, those little food containers. Why can't we do that with Coca-Cola? Why can't, you know, we do that when it comes to things that are actually affecting Black and brown folks? But, you know, it has to start with us all coming together and, first of all, realizing it's a problem and then going about the adequate ways to address it and being intentional about it, for sure.
For sure. Thank you guys so much. So as, you know, as we, so that, for those who don't know, that contract will be up next June. And so the contract can't be extended, but it can be renewed, and the university can also make a new contract with Pepsi or Nestle or any other corporation like that. So as we come closer to that, do you guys think that we should have protests, or, you know, speaking directly to admin, or how do you think we go about this? Like, you know, really, really having action where our words are.
Personally, I would usually say protest, but given the pandemic and everything, and especially the recent, like, new restraints with the COVID-19 virus in Connecticut, limiting how many people could be in groups and whatnot, I think the best way is that even if we cannot meet physically, that I think within these past few months, it's shown that organizing will still continue to happen regardless, even if you're not physically there. I mean, there's people who are organizing with one person in China and one person in India and one person in Spain. Like, there's people organizing all throughout the world. And I think having conversations with admin, but also having conversations on Zoom like this, creating power maps, putting pressures on certain things and weak points of other people's company or whatever we're trying to tackle, whatever that is, creating those power maps, facilitating workshops, facilitating teach-ins, which is very important. Teach-ins could be very useful, especially for the student body. I think the way to tackle this is utilizing the sources we have now, which is especially digital media and our virtual outlets. I think social media is a big way as well, because social media tends to spread things very quickly, very rapidly. I would say that demands always are a great way to start, really pinpointing what you want to tackle and how you're going to tackle it and why this is wrong, and showing that to the university. And although we've been doing that for over 20 years now, I think more than ever, given the time that we're in, like, we only have 30 years to radically change the world. Like, this is something that we really, really need to put pressure on.
Absolutely. And it, you know, it doesn't happen right. I think a lot of times organizations have a bad habit of addressing things when they happen. Like, it would be very, very poor of us to only talk about Coca-Cola in June. Like, the work has to start now. And that comes in the forms of, like, Brittany's talking about, like, having these conversations, getting people to understand that, you know, Ben, to your point, like, this is happening in June. We're in November now. What do we do to lead up to that? How do we first start to put in, you know, how do we plant that seed to let people know that there's an issue? And I think, you know, we have to start opening up those conversations and those workshops and those seminars so that people can actually understand what we're talking about, and then not come out and be ignorant and be like, what do you mean, Coca-Cola, blah, 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 and just have a bunch of opposition without knowing what's going on. Secondly, I think, you know, we have to be, we're student leaders. Both Brittany and I are in positions where if we email a key member of administration, they'll hit us back within like 2 or 3 days. And having that power and having that, you know, that direct line to a lot of administration, is going to be necessary. Like, we're going to have to reach out to these people and be like, hey, can we get a meeting? Because we want to show you exactly how not only this isn't going to work for us, but exactly how this affects the students of UConn, because they love to, you know, see, like, ask, how does it affect UConn students directly, this, that, and the third. Like, we have to start opening up those conversations now, start, even if we meet administration in a few months, dropping those seeds and be like, look, I know Coca-Cola's ending in a bit. What's the plan on that? Any word on Coca-Cola? And just building those up to the point where we'll be able to have these, you know, have a meeting where we'll be like, look, this doesn't work for us. And we need you to find a different way to get money. We need you to find a different sponsor, because this one is directly complicit in the destruction of Black and brown bodies across the globe, in the destruction of the environment across the globe. So, leading up to it, we have to be intentional, and we have to be, you know, we have to take advantage of every single connection that we have, to talk to the people that have the power to change things, and get the people who are going to be witnessing this and watching this on our page to understand, even if they don't agree, right? They'll at least have the information to be able to see things in a different light and not just see, oh, you're trying to ban Coca-Cola. Why? That's stupid. You know? But yeah, just education and then utilizing those connections to make real actionable change happen has to be at the forefront.
Exactly. It's super important to hold the university accountable and get the facts so we can make a change. Finally, we want to ask you guys how you think that people listening who have never had any experience with activism can come into collaborative organizing and effectively advocate for something like banning Coke or climate change or racial justice?
First of all, I think, activism is not, I think activism gets misconstrued, because activism is not just you're in the streets protesting every day. Like, activism is living with, your beliefs and your values on a day-to-day basis, and then implementing them, not in, just in your life, but in everybody's life around you, and then in the institutions that govern how you live your life. I know that there's, you know, like, anytime you engage with any content that you weren't previously aware of, and cognitive dissonance occurs, and you're aware of information you're previously ignorant to, you know, there's going to be growing pains. There's going to be, some difficulty in adjusting and acclimating to that new information. But then it's about how do you shift, and how do you use that and make change. And I just want anybody who's listening to this, if you really care about your fellow person, if you want the world to survive in the years coming, if you want to leave land for your children, if you want our societies to be intact, go do your research on this, because this is something that right now it may not affect you directly. As a lot of things do. A lot of things that are real issues may not affect you directly, but it's not about whether it affects you directly. It's about the people that it affects. It's about what's going to happen down the line if we wait and we drag our feet, you know? So for people watching this, I want you to understand that you don't have to do what me and Brittany do. But at the very basic level, I want you to educate yourself, and I want you to be able to have those honest conversations, to be honest with yourself about things that you didn't know. And now that you know them, what are you going to do with that information? All we want people to do is really grow, like come across this new information, see that there has to be change, and grow, you know, just progress. If there was talks around quarantine that, you know, if you come out of quarantine and you didn't learn anything or you didn't change in some way, you squandered that opportunity. And I would urge people not to squander this one. You know, this is a great platform that you guys have created. And I thank you again for, you know, having us on here, because this is a conversation that people need to hear. So for those who hear it, you know, you've already come across this information. Now you got to do something about it. And it doesn't have to be in our way. It could be in your way, but, you know, you can't do nothing. That's all I can say.
I would just like to say, I don't know, because I look at my own story of activism. I don't usually call myself an activist. I don't know, because I feel weird, because I feel like when I think of the word activist or activism, I think of someone who's advocating. But at the same time, I think it's also important to highlight and emphasize that just because you're advocating doesn't mean that your education or learning ability caps there. So what I mean by that is that with my activism, I think looking back at it now, I've been advocating for my whole life only because that's always been my life on the line. And I think the most people who are affected by these issues have been activists all along just because their life is on the line. Like when I wrote the Mental Care Act, or when I fight for Puerto Rico or racial inequality and et cetera, all these things, even queer rights, whatever it is, it's always been because my life or someone I love, their life is on the line. And I think for a lot of people, whether that's you being an ally or whether that's your life on the line, it's the idea that if, like what Mason said before, we all have to be free basically for liberation. Like it just can't be a certain group of people that are liberated and not the rest of us. And same thing with climate changing, climate justice. So what I say with activism is that I think there's a lot of things that people are doing and they don't even realize how impactful they are. And I think one thing about activism is that it's important not to beat yourself up. It's important to realize even the smallest actions that you do could really make the biggest difference. Just everyday things like even educating yourself or, for example, watching a TED Talk and then learning something about environmental justice and then like talking to your friends about it and educating them about it. There's so many forms of activism, whether that's doing teach-ins, whether that's educating yourself and spreading that information. I would say to get involved in activism, it shouldn't just be, oh, I want to address this issue, but you really have to have some sort of personal connection with it that's going to keep pushing your passion for it, or you're going to really just have to have some emotional tie to it, whether that affects you personally or someone that you love, or just because you want to make a greater difference. Without that passion and without that fire, there's going to be a burnout, because there's a lot of folks who are activists, but they're only activists because their life is on the line, and it's those inequalities that really shake up the world. Like people like me or Mason or anyone else, like we don't get to take a break from activism work because that's always our life on the line. So I would say with activism, it requires consistency, it requires empathy, it requires non-binary thinking, it requires a lot of things. And I think the biggest thing, even that Kat Morris highlights, the founder of UCO, is that for change we must have radical love. And what I mean by that is that, like what Mason said, radical isn't crazy. It's just a major shift in a system that was already made to oppress people, and it's shifting that to make it more equitable for other people. And with radical love, we talk about we need to love one another, or at least care for one another, in order to address these issues. And I think that's the root and start of activism.
Wow. Really, really powerful words from you guys.
That radical love.
Radical love. That's so important. I know there are going to be some good quotes from this. But yeah, that's it for our questions. It's really unfortunate that we have to have this conversation, but I'm very inspired by it. I want to go do more, just from being here. Renee, do you have any last thoughts?
I don't have any last thoughts. If, B or Mason, if you have any last things you want to share before we conclude, go for it if you're good.
I would just briefly, I like to say, make your work and your activism or whatever you do in life, whatever it is, make it intentional, make it have a purpose, and also make it intersectional, whatever you do. Because like I said, binary thinking is a very dangerous way to go about living on in this world. We don't ever want to think in a binary lens. We want to think in a non-binary lens and acknowledge those intersectional components and identities and complexities. So all I would say is that whatever you do in this world, it should be through the lens of non-binary thinking, and the ultimate goal should be solidarity.
And for me, I'd just like to leave everybody who's listening with three things. Number one, the most important thing when seeking change is consistency. You can't say that you want something and then 1 week you're all in, and the next week you're all in, and then the third week you're half in, and then the fourth week you're half. It has to all be consistent, you know? And that's how things grow and progress. Secondly, you know, to Brittany's point, intersectionality is the most important part in any struggle. You know, if any of us aren't free, none of us are free. And we have to take that approach in the most sincere way, you know? It's not just other people we're talking about. It's humanity, and we're all a part of humanity. And third, approach these things with love, you know? The Coca-Cola is a very heated topic for people who care about, you know, racial justice and environmental justice. When oppressors oppress, it's a very hateful thing. But we want people to approach these things with love. You know, you may not love who's oppressing you. You may not, you know, you may not have any positive feelings towards them. But in this struggle, we don't get anywhere without love. We don't get anywhere without caring for one another, because that's why we're here. That's why we're having this conversation. We wouldn't be having this conversation if we didn't care about the UConn community, if we didn't want to, you know, get everybody healthy, if we didn't want to protect our pack. So in the most sincere way, approach everybody with love and, you know, live your life in that way. And you'll be successful, and all of your work will bear fruits in everything that you do.
Follow UConn Perg on Instagram, NAACP UConn on Instagram, and Collaborative Organizing. And again, thank you guys so much. And I think this is the part of the podcast where the outro music plays.